Success comes to the common man, and even to the commonplace ability. But to triumph over the calamities and terrors of mortal life is the part of a great man only. Truly, to be always happy and to pass through life without a mental pang is to be ignorant of one half of nature. You are a great man, but how do I know it if fortune gives you no opportunity of showing your worth? You have entered as a contestant at the Olympic Games, but none other besides you. You gain the crown, the victory you do not gain. You have my congratulations, but not as a brave man, but as if you had obtained the consulship or proctorship. You have enhanced your prestige. In like manner also, I may say to a good man, if no harder circumstance has given him the opportunity whereby he alone might show the strength of his mind, I judge you unfortunate. You have passed through life without an antagonist. No one will know what you can do, not even yourself. For if a man is to know himself, he must be tested. No one finds out what he can do except by trying. And so some men have presented themselves voluntarily to laggard misfortune, and have sought an opportunity to blazon forth their worth when it was about to pass into obscurity. Great men, I say, rejoice ofttimes in adversity, as do brave soldiers in warfare. I once heard Triumphus, a gladiator in the time of Tiberius Caesar, complaining of the scarcity of shows. How fair an age, he said, has passed away. True worth is eager for danger and thinks rather of its goal than of what it may have to suffer, since even what it will have to suffer is a part of its glory. Warriors glory in their wounds and rejoice to display the blood spilled with luckier fortune. Those who return from the battle unhurt may have fought as well, but the man who returns with a wound wins the greater regard. God, I say, is showing favor to those whom he desires to achieve the highest possible virtue whenever he gives them the means of doing a courageous and brave deed, and to this end they must encounter some difficulty in life. You learn to know a pilot in a storm, a soldier in the battle line. How can I know with what spirit you will face poverty if you wallow in wealth? How can I know with what firmness you will face disgrace, ill fame, and public hatred if you attain to old age amidst rounds of applause? If a popularity attends you that is irresistible and flows to you from a certain leaning of men's minds, how do I know with what equanimity you would bear the loss of children if you see around you all that you have fathered? I have heard you offering consolation to others. If you have been offering it to yourself, if you had been telling yourself not to grieve, then I might have seen your true character. Do not, I beg of you, shrink in fear from those things which the immortal gods apply like spurs, as it were, to our souls. Disaster is virtue's opportunity. Justly may those be termed unhappy who are dulled by an excess of good fortune, who rest, as it were, in dead calm upon a quiet sea. Whatever happens will come to them as a change. Cruel fortune bears hardest upon the inexperienced. To the tender neck the yoke is heavy. The raw recruit turns pale at the thought of a wound, but the veteran looks undaunted upon his own gore, knowing that blood has often been the price of his victory. In like manner, God hardens, he reviews, and disciplines those whom he approves, whom he loves. Those, however, whom he seems to favor, whom he seems to spare, he is really keeping soft against ills to come. For you are wrong if you suppose that anyone is exempt from ill. Even the man who has prospered long will have his share someday. Whoever seems to have been released has only been reprieved. Why is it that God afflicts the best men with ill health, or sorrow, or some other misfortune? It is for the same reason that in the army the bravest men are assigned to the hazardous tasks. It is the picked soldier that a general sends to surprise the enemy by a night attack, or to reconnoitre the road, or to dislodge a garrison. Not a man of these will say as he goes, "My commander has done me an ill turn," but instead he will say, "He has paid me a compliment." In like manner, all those who are called to suffer what would make cowards and poltroons weep may say, God has deemed us worthy instruments of his purpose to discover how much human nature can endure. Flee luxury. Flee enfeebling good fortune, from which men's minds grow sodden. And if nothing intervenes to remind them of the common lot, they sink, as it were, into the stupor of unending drunkenness. The man who has always had glazed windows to shield him from a drought, whose feet have been kept warm by hot applications renewed from time to time, whose dining halls have been tempered by hot air, passing beneath the floor and circulating round the walls, this man will run great risk if he is brushed by even a gentle breeze. While all excesses are hurtful, the most dangerous is unlimited good fortune. It excites the brain, it evokes vain fancies in the mind, and clouds in deep fog the boundary between falsehood and truth. Would it not be better, summoning virtue's help, to endure everlasting ill fortune than to be bursting with unlimited and immoderate blessings? Death from starvation comes very gently, but from gorging, men explode. And so in the case of good men, the gods follow the same rule that teachers follow with their pupils. They require most effort from those of whom they have the surest hopes. Do you imagine that the Laocadamians hate their children when they test their mettle by lashing them in public? Their own fathers call upon them to endure bravely the blows of the whip and ask them, though mangled and half dead, to keep offering their wounded bodies to further wounds. Why then is it strange if God tries noble spirits with severity? No proof of virtue is ever mild. If we are lashed and torn by fortune, let us bear it. It is not cruelty, but a struggle, and the oftener we engage in it, the stronger we shall be. The staunchest member of the body is the one that is kept in constant use. We should offer ourselves to fortune in that order, struggling with her. We may be hardened by her. Gradually, she will make us a match for herself. The Value of Adversity to a Great Man, from Seneca on Providence, 5 BC to 65 AD, was the life of Lucius Annaeus Seneca. He was a Roman author of philosophical and literary works. Well, welcome to this episode of the Hard Men Podcast. That was a phenomenal excerpt from Seneca, one of my favorites of his short writings. It's actually found in the book What is a Man, which is edited book and compilation by Walter Newell. Definitely encourage. There's some really good writings. You can check that out. But again, that one from Seneca, of course, Stoic philosopher. I love that. Disaster is virtue's opportunity. We need to be reminded of that continually, don't we, as men? He says, why is it that God afflicts the best men with ill health or sorrow or misfortune? Again, he's really saying exactly what we read in Proverbs and Hebrews 12, that God loves his sons, and so he afflicts them severely. And so that when you see in your life that there's tons of affliction, you shouldn't say, why is God doing this to me? Why does God hate me? Why has God singled me out? It's the same reason he singled Job out, because he loved him. Job was his prized possession. And so we should rejoice when we meet with trials like this. We're going to talk more about that and what I'm calling ashes work, how to do the ashes work for men in this episode. But before we do that, a few housekeeping items. Number one, I was banned on Twitter this week for 24 hours. I was in the Twitter timeout holding pen, and I've been washed and renewed. I've gone down to the river. The preacher man has washed away all my sins, and I've learned my lesson. And I will no longer be knocking over Piggly Wigglies in Yazoo. And I will be... Yeah, no, I'm not going to change anything. But it is interesting because, it was Reverend Kim, I think is the lady's name, who turned me in for violent threats. Of course, there were no violent threats. But aren't lady pastors so-called just wonderful people? So that was kind of humorous, but always a good reminder, you know, keep your sword sharp and your shields up. And there are people who hate us out in the world. Reverend Kim is now blocked because she just keeps trying to turn me in. Apparently women like making false accusations. It's kind of interesting. Thought women didn't lie or sin or... Turns out they do. Turns out they do. So I want to jump in to just a shout out to our sponsors, Reformation Heritage Books. They've got a special going on right now for Puritan paperbacks. If you listen to the episode with me and Dr. Joel Beakey, we talked about that. And so you can get some great copies right now, I think up to like 20% off. So go to heritagebook.org. And then also I'd encourage you to check out Christendom Bible College. We really got to know these guys. Pretty well, and great group of folks. By the way, if you're coming to County Before Country, I will be there. Brian Sauvé will be there. We're going to be in Ohio with Michael Foster and the crew. We got John Moody, Andrew Isker, who is the Boniface option on Twitter. I believe he's going to be there representing Gab for Andrew Torba, and some other really cool people as well that we're going to be interfacing with. Nate Spearing. Hopefully Nate listens to this episode. He's going to be out there, Warriors Tending Gardens. So hopefully Nate and I get to do some podcasting. I will also be doing official media, I guess, for Michael and the conference. So hopefully be interviewing some of those guests. You'll see a lot of that content on this podcast. And I think it's going to be a good show. We'll have a lot of that content for Patreon supporters, patrons only. So be sure, if you're not yet, become a Patreon supporter. And just a heads up, we're switching over the membership. I had some on ericcon.com, and it was just a hassle, quite frankly, managing the online and then trying to do, you know, the Patreon side as well. So we're going back to just Patreon, and it's going to be easier for me to get you better content more frequently behind a paywall to really, you know, we want to give the love to our VIP supporters. We're also going to do something different. I know a lot of you, we've been manually sending shirts and cups and stuff like that. We're going to automate that process. So everything should be more streamlined. If you've had any headaches with that, we definitely apologize. So we're going to sort of a drop shipping thing, and that should help get merchandise. And also, again, through Patreon, you get better, more exclusive content. So we're going to be rolling that out upcoming. If you're not yet, but you're available, if you haven't yet signed up, be sure to check out County Before Country. I think they've got an Eventbrite set up for it. Foster does. And it's going to be a good time, September 1st and 2nd, I think. So come join us. Here's some great speakers. And yeah, sit back and buckle up for this show. It's going to be a good one. We're talking, again, about doing the ashes work, a concept that I picked up from Robert Bly's book, Iron John.
Christendom Bible College offers a one-year certificate in the humanities for students who intend to pursue a degree or for students who prefer to begin their chosen occupations upon completion of our program. Older students who never attended college or who went to a college where the humanities were less robust will also find our program stimulating and suitable. Located steps from the Ohio River in the town of New Richmond, we're unaccredited in order to remain free to teach as our biblically minded consciences demand. As servants of Christ, we won't wear the yoke of the woke. Instead, we stand on the shoulders of Christianity's giants, not to stew in nostalgia, but to see through the culture war's fall to the glorious days of a Christendom still to be built. Our exceptional faculty are committed to the historic, biblical foundations of our faith. Come be a part of Christendom Bible College. Visit us on the web at christendombiblecollege.org to learn more. While there, be sure to sign up for our email updates and receive your free 3-chapter excerpt of our very own Dr. Frank J. Smith's new book, Race, Church, and Society.
From Virgil to Dante to Dumas, the greats have understood a major thematic element in the story of masculinity. This is a part of every man's masculine journey if he is to make it and to make it well. And that's this descent into hell. There must be a descent. There must be, as there was in the Aeneid for Aeneas, the finding of the golden branch of the ancient tree. Sybil said, you've got to find this golden branch so that you can enter the gates of hell, but more so that you can ascend, right? If men are to ascend into glory, if Aeneas was to build this glorious people, which would become the Roman Empire, then he had to descend into hell. Interestingly enough, he descends and he meets his father, and his father shows him the glory of his offspring and his seed and the generations that will come. And then he comes back to life as a new man to found a new people. But that's what I want to focus on in this episode, that men must descend into suffering. We must do the work of eating ashes, as Robert Bly says. We must enter into grief and death. Right? This concept, as I said, from Robert Bly in the book Iron John, he calls it the season of eating ashes. So if you look at the different phases of men's life, it's not always ashes, right? One of the things he uses from Grimm's fairy tale, Iron John, it's in the fairy tale collection. If you get the complete works, it's in there. You can read the story. But he basically exposits, what does this fairy tale mean? It's packed with meaning. Well, one of the things is the boy rides out as a knight in battle, and they've got multiple colors, right? So you've got red, you've got black. So these different colors symbolically show the different parts of a man's life and work. And so one of those, the black, is the eating of ashes. We all as men need seasons like Job where we learn to do the ashes work, right? You learn to do the schlepping. You're being mistreated. You're getting no respect. You're the low guy in the totem pole. I remember days when I was working as a store manager at Valvoline Instant Oil Change. And even before I was a manager, I'm going to seminary. I've been to college. And I remember one day I was standing in the store by myself in the summer heat. It's like 115 degrees in the store in Kentucky. And I've got Dawn soap in a mop and a bucket. And I'm just scrubbing a floor. Right? It was a realization of ashes work. It's Joseph, the dreamer, in a prison of despair, having been sold into slavery by his brothers. And we're told that this is good for a man. Lamentations says this: "It is good for a man that he bear the yoke in his youth. Let him sit alone in silence when it is laid on him, and let him put his mouth in the dust. There may yet be hope. Let him give his cheek to the one who strikes, and let him be filled with insults." So he's actually, we'll get into this at the end, but he's actually given instruction about there's a proper response for you when suffering comes to your life. It's not to go entertain yourself to death, right? There's a reason that when people die, it's appropriate that we grieve. And so when we're in the middle of ashes work, there's an appropriate response. What does Lamentations 3 say? Verse 27, "It's good for a man to bear the yoke in his youth. Let him sit alone in silence when it is laid on him." That's the proper response. You do what Job did. You sit in the dust, in the ashes, and you think. Edmond Dantès had plenty of time to think in the Chateau d'If, did he not? Right? This is why this is one of the greatest stories ever told, because it is capturing this Joseph-like theme. This is good for men like Edmond Dantès. Remember Dante's Inferno, The Descent into Hell? Edmond Dantès is descending into hell. He's wronged. He's robbed of his fiancée, Mercedes. Right? He goes wrongfully to prison. He's mistreated. He suffers injustice. He meets the father, the Abbe Faria. Right? He feels the agony of having everything stripped from him. And this is hard to hear, but this is part of the masculine journey. No one wants this work, but it is essential. Another good example of this is Job. He is driven to eat dust and ashes as part of a testing, right? We read at the beginning of the book, as we often don't get to see in our own lives, but we get to see this view into the heavenly council, and Satan's roaming the earth and he's bored, I guess. And God says, "Hey, have you considered Job?" Now we think, man, this is cruel. Job is a righteous man. We're told that in the opening chapters of the book. And what happens to Job? He loses his wealth, his health, his social standing. He loses all 10 of his children. In other words, Job loses everything. And as he sits in dust and ashes, he complains, he pleads, he speaks. And we're told that Job is righteous, right? So Job is the wind, right? He's complaining, he's pleading with God, he's contending against these false accusers and his frenemies, right? This is what you do. This is ashes work. This is what you do when you're suffering. Right, again, this is where the old Grimm's fairy tale, another Grimm's fairy tale, Cinderella, comes from. That's what it's about. Cinder. She's the ashes girl. Right? She's the girl that has to eat the cinders of the fire. She has to become a servant in her own home. She descends. She's humbled down to her bones. And what's the end? She's transformed and rises anew. Right? She's a picture of the phoenix. And again, masculinity is that type of journey. Every man seasonally has to go through this ashes work. Now, it's interesting. I would point to Psalm 107. Sometimes, we look at that psalm. I would encourage you to read it. Sometimes we're brought low because the seas are rough. right? This is what Seneca was talking about. It's just God brings trials into your life. It's not necessarily because of anything that you've done, but you have to deal with them, and we're brought low. Sometimes in Psalm 107, it's because of our own stupidity. Sometimes we're brought low through our own folly, right? Sometimes it's because we reject the word of the Lord, and we do really stupid things, and so we have to pay the penalty for them, and it makes our lives miserable, right? John Wayne was right. Life is hard. It's even harder when you're stupid, and we've all been there. But that's also the beauty of Psalm 107. What does he say? I cried out to the Lord, and God heard me and rescued me from all my trials. So vastly different reasons we might be in suffering or brought low, and yet the response there is the same. We cry out to God. If you've been stupid, then you can cry out to God. And if life just has been really hard and providence has brought trials, then you can still pray and cry out to God, right? It really doesn't matter. In the Aeneid, Sibyl tells Aeneas he can descend into hell, that is the black, but the real trick is the ascent back, right? We spoke of this before. The real trick is resurrection and rebirth. And I think it's a good picture from the Aeneid because so many men will go through trials. Some men are crushed in their trials, right? We all know people who do not come out the other side as mature men. But here's the deal. If you want to be a mature, hard man, then you need to embrace this journey. You need to embrace this symbolic eating of death and eating of thorns and rising anew as the phoenix. One of the key things that we've advocated on the Hard Men podcast is being men who are sages, men whose minds are sharp, and especially men who know where they are in the historical current of the Reformed faith. One of the best ways that you can grow in this capacity to know your history and to think like the great men of old is to read great works. And one of those is the works of William Perkins. It is a 10-volume set from Reformation Heritage Books. We'll include links for that in the show notes. But the works of William Perkins fills a major gap in Reformed and Puritan theology. Though Perkins is best known today for his writings on predestination, he also wrote prolifically on many subjects, and his works filled over 2,000 large pages of small print and 3 folio volumes and have been reprinted several times in the decades since his death. So you can definitely check this out at heritagebooks.org. Really fantastic work. You can get the whole set for $280 and free shipping. Again, heritagebooks.org. You can also check out individual copies. Build your collection one by one. Check out this valuable resource from Reformation Heritage Books. In hell, Aeneas finds his father and he sees visions of a glorious future. The vision is gold. This is what he finds, and we all find in the midst of the hell, the black. In the deepest, darkest minds, this is where we find the golden treasure. Do you see the point? Only by descending into the black of death can one find the gold. And the gold that Aeneas finds is the vision for his people and his place, for Rome, right? For what he will build in Latinum, right? This is how you find the golden vision, is through the dark descent. The things Aeneas and therefore all heroic men must conquer in the darkness are there so that they can find the gold described by Virgil. And I'm quoting now from the Aeneid. There in the entryway, the gorge of hell itself, grief and the pangs of conscience make their beds, and fatal pale disease lives there, and bleak old age, dread and hunger, seductress to crime and grinding poverty, all terrible shapes to see, and death and deadly struggle, and sleep, twin brother of death, and twisted wicked joys, and facing them at the threshold, war rife with death, and the furies, iron chambers, and mad raging strife, whose blood-stained headbands knot her snaky locks. And then Virgil, in one line, captures a world rich with meaning just following this passage. He says this, "Down deep they harden fast." Now he's talking about the depths of hell and how they refine character, they refine our virtue, they fire the soul like nothing else can with a godly passion. You see, a man must go down deep in his trials, his suffering, his agony, and then be reborn if he is to be hard. That is, hardened like the fine iron of a forged blade. Virgil goes on. The seeds of life, fiery in their force, divine their birth, but they are weighed down by the body's ills or dulled, by earthly limbs and flesh that's born for death. That is the source of all men's fears and longings, joys and sorrows, nor can they see the heaven's light shut up in the body's tomb, a prison dark and deep. Again, we think of Joseph in the Old Testament. He learned this same lesson. Think of all the things that Virgil is so good at describing about what you face when you enter these dark seasons of hell and ashes work, what it means to be hungry, what it means to be crushed by the weight, maybe of work, maybe of life's conflict and trials. I can think of so many things pastorally and personally. When you go through relationships that it's just like they're difficult and there doesn't seem to ever be a terminus for when they'll be resolved, right? It feels like a prison, dark and deep. But consider, again, Joseph and what the Lord said was happening in the life of Joseph. This is from the Psalm. It says, when he summoned a famine, that is God, summoned a famine on the land and broke all supply of bread, he had sent a man ahead of them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. His feet were hurt with fetters. His neck was put in a collar of iron until what he, God, had said came to pass. Here's the key phrase, verse 19. The word of the Lord tested him. Right? Joseph was being tested. In Psalm 23, the man in the psalm, David, descends into the valley of the shadow of death. Again, there's the black from Grimm's fairy tale that Robert Bly describes. The man descends into the valley of the shadow. He descends into death and hell and agony. Here's another key point, though. He has a guide, a shepherd, a sage, someone who is there to lead him along the dark, narrow paths, to initiate him and to make sure that he makes it through. It's a wise word for us. If you're going to make it through these hellacious journeys of masculinity, you need a savior. You need Jesus Christ leading you through them. You need someone who knows the way through death to resurrection. Why do so many men take the black pill in the manosphere? Because they go into the valley of the shadow of death and they become darkness. They know how to put on the black robes, but they don't know how to rise again and take them off. Psalm 23 doesn't end with a shepherd in a valley in the shadow of death. It ends with a great feast fit for a king, white. This is where our journey ends. It doesn't end in the darkness. And this is what all the black pill people don't understand. The final destination in the process of maturity for men is not that you remain in the ashes forever. Some of us get stuck there. This is why young men need old men to initiate us, right? You need sage guides. This is one of the problems why we don't grow men in our culture today, because we don't have old men to initiate. Look at the churches. If you're in a healthy church today, the chances of you having old men in your churches is very slim in America. I think of our church, and there's a lot of faithful people, but we're all mostly young because the last generation just wasn't present. Men need descent and trials so severe that they purify the soul. And this is what's hard for us to hear sometimes. We need trials that are so difficult that they drive sin, wickedness, and the lack of virtue from us. They drive vice from us. But here's the thing. We also need wise older men to see us through them, sort of the midwives of masculinity, so that men can come out reborn, that they come out of the trials with heroic chests. They come out like champions. Aeneas makes it through the trial because his father is the one guiding him through. He's there in life and he's there in death. And he's showing his son the way. This is a picture of true godly pietas. Older men showing their sons the way. You can do this. You can make it. Here's how you pull the oar through the dark and dreary seas. Here's how you do it. Here's how you keep pressing on when the salty sea foam is blowing in your face and into your wounds, stinging with every strike. This is how you do that. But I want you to think about our culture today. Do we have male initiators, especially older men? No. What do we have? Boys are raised predominantly by women, their mothers, Oftentimes, they can even be good women. But boys are raised by women at every stage of their journey when it should be that they're raised by men, especially as you get into the post-infant teenage years. Older children and teenagers, boys, need men to initiate them. But what do they have? They have women at home. Then they go to school and they spend time with mothers. And then they go to college and they're around women. And so basically, they're trained how to please women, not how to be men. And those are two vastly different things. The major influencers on boys today are women. And here's the problem. Women can't teach men or teach boys how to be good men. It is impossible, right? Feminism has tried to do that. And what you get is the soft, just effeminate boy who never grows up. This is a result of being raised by women. Men today are raised by coddling mothers and school moms till 18 or later. Boys are never initiated in the way of men. They are emasculated at every turn by an army of Karens. They are suffocated with safetyism, taught that risk should be avoided at all costs. They are reared in the corporate spaces with things like widget making and quota meeting. Their masculine, courageous souls are suffocated by bureaucratic filth. Right, just pass the buck. Somebody else will deal with it. Try to avoid conflict. Be passive aggressive. All of this destroys masculine energy. Again, just to hit on a point I mentioned just a moment ago, sometimes well-meaning homeschool moms can't let go and need to. Right? They want to be just present for every moment. But your boys especially need older men to help them in the masculine journey, to initiate them. Other times, it's controlling, nasty feminists trying to poison the minds of our young men, and they're definitely trying to do that. They tell these boys that all forms of masculinity are toxic, that what you really need is to become a woman. By the way, women were telling, the best you can do is become a man. Right? We're chemically castrating and metaphorically castrating our boys through indoctrination and through discouragement campaigns. And yes, even through our medical establishment. Many pastors teach that women are more spiritual than men. They teach that women by nature are more godly, which really, when you think about it, is an odd statement given that women initiate 70% of all divorces in America, and that number goes up to 90% when they're college-educated women. Doesn't seem like women, at least based on the data, are more spiritual or godly than men, especially not, and this was the thing I got blocked on Twitter for, you've got women on TikTok boasting about how many men they've had sex with, and some of them are 50, 80, or more. Don't try to tell me that women are more godly than men. Right? Men need mentors. They need old men who expose them to calculated danger and risk and pain and toil. Like Aeneas, men must learn the hard discipline of plowing the dark sea depths, descending into hell. They must learn by heart their mission, their people, their trajectory. They need to be reminded like Abraham and like Aeneas' father reminded him, these are the glorious men that will come from your stock. So press on, endure the hardship, keep the mission in mind. Old men must breathe into them courage and fiery virtue. Virgil says at one point, each of us must suffer his own demanding ghost. As Jordan Peterson would say, a man must face his shadow. And an older man needs to be there to show us how to wrestle our own ghosts, how to face our own shadow and not be overwhelmed or undone. So how can we do this ashes work? How can we do this ashes work? First of all, we refuse to avoid or escape it. Right? This is one of the key problems for men. This is what alcoholism is all about. This is what being a fat, overweight slob is all about. This is what being addicted to various substances or pills is all about, right? It's just a different variation on escapism, right? Avoidance. So one of the ways that we do ashes work is we refuse to get drunk. We refuse to go be a fornicating man whore. We refuse to bed a dozen women and think that it'll make us feel better about the fact that what we really need to be doing is the ashes work. When we're sad and broken by life's trials, we need to face that, Don't become angry and bitter and yelling at your kids or your wife or your coworkers, but sit alone in the silence, Lamentations 3, and be sad. Maybe you pick up a journal. Maybe you talk to a friend or an older wise man mentor who can lead you through these trials, but you say what you are. You call it like it is. You don't try to mask the pain, right? That's what alcohol can become, just a masking. So I'm going to go to a party and I'm just going to get, you know, drink because that's like, you know, good time Charlie. I'm going to do that because that feels better than sitting and being like, you know what, I'm hurting. Right? When our job is overwhelming and we feel crushed, we respond to it in obedience by sitting in the ashes. We face our sadness. We own it. We accept it. We don't run. Again, a mentor, an older wise man can help us with this. Number two, how can we do the ashes work? We can accept the descent. There's so much of this that we just have to accept that this is where we're going. This has to be a part of journeys and seasons. We need to do the work of tending our own soul, building a garden and a sanctuary space where we can do what Robert Bly calls soul work, right? And this isn't some gay therapeutic terminology, by the way. This is men, maybe it's you write down a list of like, what is my mission, right? You read Michael Foster's It's Good to Be a Man. You start thinking about your mission and how you can take dominion. You think about your skills. But maybe you also think about, in light of that mission, why is my job so frustrating? Why is this person who's like a thorn in my flesh, why is it so frustrating? Why do I feel so dejected? And David was the manliest man of all time, to some extent, outside of Christ. And then you got Psalm 42, and he's saying to his own soul, right? He's doing the soul work. He says, why are you downcast within me, O my soul? Like that soul work, sitting down and saying, what is going on in my own heart? God, help me. Help me to figure out why I feel this way. Speaking of Seneca, one of the things that is often overlooked and misunderstood about the Stoics was that they were like, feel no emotion. That's actually not true. What they would say is feel the emotion, but be careful before you respond, right? So to know yourself and say, what emotions am I feeling right now? And why? We can stay there before we respond in anger or rage, or, you know, we go down the road and we start flipping people off because they cut us off in traffic, right? A godly, mature, wise man will take the time to know his own soul, right? Some of this can be reading. It can be getting alone, praying, thinking, again, having a wise conversation with a mentor, right? But we don't kick against the goads. We welcome the humiliation. We do not flinch at the lash, but we accept it. We accept the hard things that God has put in our life. Right? This is where you get to like the AA, their serenity prayer. This is the part where we accept the things that we cannot change. God has placed hardships that are not going away. God has brought the Alzheimer's. God has brought the sickness. He's brought the disease. He's brought the afflicted financial situation. He's brought the difficult marriage. He's brought the difficult relationship with your child. We can't change it. We can't make it go away in an instant. But we also don't have to run from it. I think about Job, Lamentations. Think about the language that they use. Lamentations 3, Job talks about the same thing. God has walled us in. He has ordained this trial. We cannot escape it. We accept our portion of wormwood. We wait for God to bring restoration, right? It's got to be in God's timing, and we yield to that. Third, how can we do the ashes work? Well, we find productive ways to channel our sadness. Sometimes it's our rage, but we learn how to channel it well, right? As I mentioned before, instead of exploding at loved ones, we do things like buffet our body and physical discipline. This is why when people are suffering, like Job, they're usually fasting and praying. That means that there's an appropriate response to suffering. The appropriate response to suffering is not getting fat and filling your face. It's not getting drunk. It's not drowning in a bottle. That's not the appropriate response. But say starting a new workout routine, restricting your caloric intake, doing the hard thing. For whatever reason, man, I'm telling you, when I have a really stressful day, when I'm like, I am in the depths right now. I go down in the gym in the basement and I pummel my body and I accept the descent. You know what's amazing? I come out feeling so much better. On the other hand, there's been times where it's like, you know, I'm going to spend 3 weeks just eating out, doing whatever. You know, Chick-fil-A, maybe that'll make me feel better. Maybe, you know, 10 or 12 Chick-fil-A milkshakes. Just kidding. I've never had that many my whole life, but you get the point. Right? You're trying to mask it. You're trying to eat your way out of it, eat your feelings, so to speak. But we need to find productive ways to channel the difficult emotions that we feel in the midst of the valley of the shadow of death. You can slog out miles on the trail. You put your rucksack on and go, right? And we lament prayerfully. It's a time of grief. It's a time of accepting that this is painful, right? We need to surrender to the purifying pain of the trial, embrace it, and lean into it. And we learn to talk like Job. Though he slay me, yet I will praise him. There's an acknowledgement. God is slaying you right now. You ever felt that way? I know I have a lot. He is slaying me right now, yet I will praise him. We acknowledge that all these trials come from God. Fourth, we need to be honest, right? And this is where we'll close. We need to be honest. We don't whitewash it. We don't whitewash it with empty platitudes. God is good all the time. I'm just too blessed to be stressed. No. Think about the words of Job. How do you handle ashes work as a man? This is what Job said. So I'm allotted months of emptiness and nights of misery are appointed to me. When I lie down, I say, when shall I arise? Right? He's sleepless. But the night is long and I am full of tossing till the dawn. There's no relief for Job. My flesh is clothed with worms and dirt. My skin hardens, then breaks out afresh. My days are swifter than a weaver's shuttle and come to their end without hope. Then you scare me with dreams and terrify me with visions, so that I would choose strangling and death rather than my bones. I loathe my life. I would not live forever. Leave me alone, for my days are a breath. Right? Job is such a great, like, that's uncomfortable. For most of us in our society today, we're like, grab the Prozac, grab the pills, grab the rosé all day. Let's just watch some Netflix and avoid how we're really feeling. That's not what being a man and doing the ashes work is about. How many times I hear of soldiers, veterans, guys who come back, look, they've lived through hell, they missed their brothers. Civilian life is hard to adjust back to it. But how many times do I get the phone call where it's like somebody is either thinking of or has committed suicide? Right? We've got to help our men go through and do the ashes work. Right? And this is the hard thing in our society. We're all trained to just ignore it. Pretend like you're happy. But pretending like you're happy when you're not isn't doing the ashes work. And it retards this ability to go through the maturation process. And so guys get stuck in the valley of the shadow of death, and some of them don't come out. Well, I hope this has been helpful for you. I want to just encourage you, if you're going through one of these seasons, don't do it alone. It's hard for men to do this, but find a brother, find a wise father in the faith and tell him what's going on. Paul was pretty open with his church, 2 Corinthians 1. For we want you to know that we despaired of life itself. We were so overburdened beyond our strength that we despaired of life itself. I think men need to have more conversations like that, and we need to allow for more conversations like that, right? Most of us who are on this journey of becoming hard men, right? We need to realize that there is a time and place to tell someone else, especially, again, a male mentor, how you feel. How are you doing? And you say something along the lines of Job, it's horrible, man. Can't sleep. I'm crushed, barely get out of bed in the morning, don't know how to face the day, doesn't feel like it's ever going to end. Right? There is a time and a place to get help for that. So I just want to encourage you guys about that, encourage you that God is doing a great work. This is our ultimate hope in our suffering. What can separate you from the love of Christ? Nothing. Christ is the one who's walking with us through the trial. though he slay us for a season, it is a temporary slaying. And be encouraged that God is disciplining you as sons. He's making you hard men. Well, thanks again for listening to this episode of the Hard Men Podcast. As always, a genuine pleasure to be a part of what I feel like is a growing community. We got men and women who are appreciating biblical masculinity, also biblical femininity. Amy Bird is not appreciating biblical femininity, but a lot of you listeners are. And so that's a great encouragement to me. If you're not yet a supporter, I would encourage you to head over to Patreon. There'll be links for that in the show notes. Become a supporter today. Also, we'll be rolling out very, very soon a new look to the website, a new store, drop shipping. We've got new pint glasses, the new Hard Men logo design. And if I do say so myself, because I did all the design work, we've got some new t-shirts, which are pretty epic. I'm going to tease those a little bit. You'll see some of that on social media. We've got the Pietas shirt. We've got the Virtus shirt, Hard Men Podcast, on both of those. They look amazing. I've seen some of these designs at the King's Hall on the, and we'll have them too, on the coffee cups and on the t-shirts in a number of colors. We have some blend t-shirts, and we also have the solid cotton, which I love. Keep that estrogen off my skin. And so be sure to check those out at ericcon.com. You can order yours, support the show, and have a dang good looking t-shirt as well. Again, special thanks to all of our supporters. Deeply appreciate you guys. Could not do this without you. It takes a lot of time, money, energy, effort, but you are joining us in this work, and we're glad to be a part of it with you. By the way, loads of new content coming your way, so be on the lookout for that. We're going to be talking to one of the trainers with Starting Strength, Mark Ripito. A lot of you guys have asked, how can I get strong? We're going to be talking about weightlifting, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, and also firearms training, why that's important for hard men. We're going to be talking, as I said before, with some of the fine gentlemen at the County Before Country. Hope to have John Moody on here again. We're going to be talking more about testosterone, male hormones, what you can do to get those in order. And we are also very excited about this. I'm going to be talking with a couple buddies on here about the businesses they are running. Some of them have built small business empires. So we're going to be talking to them about that. And then one of my friends is also in real estate development. So we're talking about wealth and wealth building for the sake of the kingdom. Right now, in the middle of 2022, Joe Biden's America. Inflation, gas prices. But man, it's a time for opportunity. So anyway, stay tuned for those episodes. There's a lot of great stuff coming your way. Until next time, men, stay frosty, fight the good fight, act like